Let's ask Danny Morrison for his view. Your view on this, Danny?
Well, I don't think that there's any surprise about what was unearthed last night. I think that the greatest scandal is that, you know, it's fair play to the BBC and Darren McIntyre, you know, for chasing after retired majors in the intelligence services and retired police officers. But really, if this was happening in Finchley, the House of Commons would be suspended this afternoon. They're going to an emergency session. But they're allowed to have inquiries into phone hacking, but not into the murder of citizens here. And I don't think it goes down to, you know, that former policeman or whoever's on the other line there, I couldn't probably hear because of the distortion. You know, to say that it was as a result of didn't have rules in place, to me, is to come up with another pretext. These were not rogue elements. You only have to listen to the accounts of some whistleblowers, for example, the former police officer, Jonty Brown, who arrested people, I think it was in Rathcoole, with weapons. And then the Spicer transcript comes in to him and says, why are you going down hard on loyalists? There are people. And he goes out to get a hamburger. On his way in, they're being released from the barracks. And we know, for example, this weapon here that was used in the killing of the bookmakers and other weapons were used to kill Roseanne Mallon, for which, of course, there has been no inquest held yet. These weapons were imported with the help of British intelligence and South Africa, who got the weapons of Israel, who seized the weapons from the PLO when they invaded Beirut in 1982. There's a huge trail here. These weapons came in and were distributed to Ulster Resistance, which had support from certain politicians, the UDA and the UVF. And they've been used to kill hundreds and hundreds of people. And in my opinion, the reason why Sir John Stevens was not allowed to publish his report was because the paper trail goes to 10 Downing Street. And that's the most important point. That's why we will never have a public inquiry.
Well, the MLA, former policing board member Basil McRae, listening to this this morning. This is shocking, Basil. What needs to happen now?
Well, I was on the policing board, chaired the Human Rights Committee for 5 years, and that did have a look at oversight of covert operations. And one of the things I can tell you is, at the moment, or at least whenever I was on the policing board, it was very robust how people went through covert operations, what happened in terms of oversight, to make sure that people acted within the law. And what came out whenever I was on the board is that we looked at quite a number of issues, including the Omagh bombing, where you looked at the evidential trail, where you might understand what had gone on, but to be honest with you, it had happened so long ago that you could not prosecute anybody. And I'm talking on either side of an argument here. And I do think that when we look at things in the past, we're going to have to realise that some horrible things happened, but it is not possible to bring people to justice. And we as a society are going to have to find a way of moving forward.
So you think we should draw a line under the past?
I have thought about this long and hard, looked at evidence or looked at information, and I have concluded that in many, many cases, it is not possible to get matters brought.
But that's not the same thing, is it? It is not possible. Well, obviously, if it's not possible, then you can't do it. But should we be searching and searching for what is possible? Or do you draw a line under the past? Do you draw a line under the right for Fintan O'Hagan to find the killers of his brother?
I understand the individual position. Where many, many people in families that have had bereavements or people affected, how traumatic it is for them. And I have the utmost sympathy. But what I can say is that in many of those cases, the evidence to support any further action is simply not possible.
Okay.
And trying to go down that route drags us back into the past.
Do you accept that, Danny Morrison?
No, I don't accept it. I mean, Republicans are being pursued for things that happened 45 years ago. So what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. I mean, you only have to look at this is widespread practice. The special branch, they weren't rogue elements. They weren't runaway. They weren't bad apples. This was a position that they had to fight a dirty war and to set loyalists against Republican. And there was things happened during the IRA campaign where power bombs went off prematurely. I would like to know now, were they the result of the dirty war? Were people who were really working for the British and civilians lost their lives as a result of these actions?
Well, I can say to you, if you look at the balance of these things, there was a dirty war going on. That is what terrorist activity is. There was a lot of civilians that were killed, a lot of people that would like answers. The problem that I've got is when people try and rake up the past with insufficient evidence, that all you do is cause more hurt without getting any form of solution. And when you try and paint the blame all on one side, a police force, an army that does have documentation against other forces that did not have documentation, you get a very unfair assessment of
whether it's unfair or not. The police forces, the security forces have got to be held to account, Basil McRae.
And Stephen, the security forces are held to account. There is a human court, an Article 2 about the taking of human life. And you have to have proper investigations, and it is proper that you should do that.
Let me bring in George Nashankle. Morning, George.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I'm just listening to the programme, and I agreed with Martin O'Hagan's brother earlier on that everybody needs closure, every victim of every part of violence in this country. But I'm listening to Danny Morrison, and the hypocrisy there is unbelievable. Danny Morrison says if this was happening in Finchley, then West Manchester would be shut down. We could say the same about Stormont and their Deputy First Minister, who admitted his part partly in the role in the troubled duty of all that the whole party played, from Claudie right through to Londonderry. Nobody's been ever brought to book. You know, and we're talking about collusion, Danny. Let's look right across the Atlantic, where more than half the weapons used to kill Orange men here and members of the Orange Order was acquired in USA military bases. You know, let's look down south, right from Charlie Hawkeye. So when the Irish government's involvement in it, you know, it could go right across the board. It's not only, you know, let's not try and rewrite history and put the blame on one part of this community. This collusion goes into the heart of every probably government in Europe. It's stretching certainly right across the Atlantic.
Security forces weren't supposed to be on one side of the community, George.
Stephen, I know. And if you go to last night's programme, they weren't, because it's obviously they're running agents in both sets of paramilitaries. But what we have here this morning and what is going to happen is the provisional Sinn Féin jumping on the bandwagon to try and say this was trying to basically rewrite history. You know, let's get back as far as Whitey Bulger and see where he got his weapons. You know, last Danny there, what he called for an inquiry into where were the weapons at Whitey Bulger.
Do you want to respond to this, Danny?
Well, the fact of the matter is that Republicans in their thousands went to jail and spent...
Did no loyalists go to jail, Danny? No.
And if I'm allowed to finish. But your remarks are aimed actually at introducing a red herring, because what we are dealing with here, and by the way, I was invited onto the programme. I didn't jump onto the programme. What we're dealing with here is a cover-up of what the state was involved in. Now, some people might want former soldiers, former policemen arrested and charged and sentenced and convicted. Others just want to know the truth. So surely we can agree that can we find out the truth about the past without necessarily dealing with the other end of it, which is contentious, and which George obviously disagrees with.
Well, I agree with you, Danny, that people need answers. I agree with you. So, but do we transform that? Does that go for the Southern Irish government's involvement? And does that go, you're asking that, and people's asking for closure. Can we get closure then? Were you calling for closure for the family of Dennis Stanislaw, say?
Listen, it covers everybody. The fact of the matter is, we know what the IRA was involved in because they claimed responsibility, and in many, many cases, people were arrested. Sometimes they were convicted under very questionable methods. And the reason why we have the British government, this current British government, wanting to derogate from the European Convention on Human Rights and rewrite a Human Rights Act that allows us to keep this all quiet, that's the very reason, because they have something to hide.
And the IRA always abided by the Convention on Human Rights, didn't it? You know, all paramilitaries did wrong. But what I say is, let's throw it open here. Let's not confine it and letting the IRA rewrite history and keep it their British government. Let's extend it to America and see what weapons came from there and USA military bases. The evidence is there, and the evidence is also there for the Irish government and the part they played on it. So let's get them all involved.
Yes, and I have no problem with that. But can we deal with the point at hand about this weapon that was used in killings and the police told the families that it had been destroyed and it turns up in
a
museum and public
display? A disgrace, and I agree with you. An absolute disgrace. It should have happened. Let's hope it gets investigated thoroughly. But also let's hope that where the Barrett Lee and field rifle came from to kill soldiers and where the sniper got trained in, let's throw it across the board and open it all up.
Well, I've already agreed with that.
So let's not rewrite history. You know, there's hurt on both sides. And
is that rewriting history? History has yet to be written. History we have a distorted view of who was behind the killings here. We have to look at...
It was a terrorist campaign with a loyalist of apologies for... I don't want to use this. Let's not use the word decency, because it may hurt some families listening. But at least loyalists say for toxic at the swingers, there's the apologies. So they had for their part in the campaign. Republicans have yet even to do that. They're yet of all you're calling for openness and transparency. Let them apologies for their part in the war first.
According to the BBC, the UVF is still active in North Belfast and in East Belfast.
Well, ask him,
what was the apology for?
Areas if it's the loyalists shooting them. It's not loyalists.
This is just a red herring here to get away from what's happening.
You can't stand to rewrite history, and people's not going to let you rewrite history. For anybody's dying breath in my community will not let you or the Republican movement rewrite history.
Okay, we're going to pause there. Your reaction to the BBC Panorama programme last night. Basil McRae, MLA, still with us this morning, former policing board member. Basil, let's not pretend that informers are going to be law-abiding citizens. The whole point of them, Basil, is that they're involved in illegality, that they'd be of no value if they weren't.
Yes.
So the question is, Basil, how far do you let them go to establish their credibility, to get them embedded? And that's a question for security forces, I guess, all around the world.
Well, it is a balance of rights, isn't it? The key position of the RUC at the time was that they decided that they wanted to try and save lives. That was their primary case. They were also being hit by many, many atrocities in 1 week. They were stretched to the limit. And so when you look at decision-making and what people would do, the most important thing they were trying to do was save lives. Now, when you look at it from some 15, 30, 40 years later on, and you look back and you say, what decisions were made, how and when, some of those decisions may not have been right. But the principle about what people were trying to do, that's what you want to investigate. And what I can tell you, having looked at a number of these issues, it is extremely difficult at this time to try and find any evidence that would stand up in court for anybody. And that's why when you were asking me,
Basil, the question is, how far do you let, what type of illegality do you let informers participate in? Like, how do you start to draw a line?
There is the Article 2 of Human Rights that says state cannot take life except under a number of very narrow circumstances.
Yeah, but can an informer, for example, can an informer maim? Can they shoot people in the legs if it doesn't kill them? Can they rob a bank?
If you were taking, but what happens when you take life? Taking life is never acceptable.
Is robbing a bank acceptable? Is shooting someone in the knees acceptable? Is breaking the law acceptable?
None of these things are acceptable. The question you ask yourself is, how do you do best for the most important, for the largest number of people? And what I can tell you is that the terrorist campaign was brought to an end because the security forces were able to infiltrate both sides of paramilitaries. That's what brought it to an end. When you look back on it and say, what were the rules and regulations of engagement, many of those are lost in the mists of time. And I absolutely understand why people that are in families would feel upset, but I can tell you it is not possible to resolve many of these issues. It's just not possible to resolve it. And trying to resolve it actually risks dragging us back to the past.
Alan Mains, how far do you think an informer should be able to go?
Well, I've just listened. I don't know, Stephen, if you can hear me. I apologise. I'm sort of out of the country at the minute, but can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. Well, I've just listened to the last 10 to 15 minutes. Let's get something very clear here. They talk about dirty war. They talk about paramilitaries. The RUC, the good thing that I can bring to the table here is that I was in the RUC and very proud to be in the RUC in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s and 2000. So there was a situation where we were faced with everyday situations protecting life and indeed protecting our own lives as well as our families. So let me make that very clear. We had an organisation that we felt at that time was fit for purpose. Now, the situation was with paramilitaries. The paramilitaries evolved with terrorism throughout the 70s, 80s and 90s, and they closed down and they were paranoid about informers. We then introduced the supergrass trials in the 80s. So we were, if you look at the history of where we were, it was before the courts. The system was brought into the open. It was brought before the courts. We were quite successful at that point, and then it collapsed, and we all know about that as well. So we were evolving as well through the troubles. So last night's programme, I think, has highlighted the history of the troubles and the very murky situation that we were probably faced with to have to deal with, literally protecting people's lives. And I can say without fear of contradiction that the RUC Special Branch basically saved hundreds, and I mean hundreds, of lives. We had Nulo alone, who was set up with the Ombudsman, and she had the privilege of investigating the police in collusion and whatever else that she had to do, and took that challenge on very well and very ably. However, I think the fact that very few cases came to light would show the rigours of her office, and indeed the way that we had to operate. And it was a very difficult time. And I think a lot of people should actually commend the police for bringing us into the 21st century in terms of this very stable society that we have now, okay, in Northern Ireland.
Alan, thank you. Chris in Lisburn. Hello, Chris.
Hello. Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, Chris.
Stephen, I'd just like to say, yes, absolutely terrible if everything turns out to be as true as what it was. But you're using a very blanket phrase there, security forces. There was hundreds of thousands of British Army troops served in Northern Ireland over the whole time period, and tens of thousands of members of the RUC GC. And you are using that term as if every one of those members was involved.
No, I'm not.
And that is terrible to say.
No, I'm not.
Now, well, you're saying security forces. So that just is a blanket phrase, saying a very minuscule, I would say, minuscule number of persons maybe have been involved in that. And that is just very offensive.
Well, Alex and Lisburn, you were in the police.
I was, Stephen. Yes, I was in the police. I was in the prison service for a time as well, so I've been around a bit. I've seen a lot. And I just want to put a scenario to you. I was never in Special Branch, but you have a young cub who is an informant, and he's told to go out and steal a car by the ones running him, the paramilitaries. He steals a car, and he tells you later on that car is used to shoot somebody, he names the two people who done the shooting in the car. That's not evidence for court. It wouldn't stand up in court. It's only his word against their word at that stage. Do you arrest them for stealing the car? That's the problem. If you arrest them for somebody had their car stolen, they want justice. So do you arrest that young cub for stealing the car?
What do you think?
Well, I don't. Well, if you do, then you've no more informant.
All right. So you don't arrest them for stealing the car, right,
well,
Alex?
But you've turned your. But you. So you. That you then. You still have the informant.
I understand that.
If you
so
do
that's...
arrest them for stealing the car, you don't have an informant
sure.
anymore.
So that's the dilemma,
that's
right?
The dilemma.
So I understand that. And I understand we're in the real world, and I understand ultimately we're trying to save lives with informants. So
yes,
I understand
I
all that.
I also say I didn't see the programme.
Okay, so...
I didn't see it.
So, Alex.
Yep.
So they don't ask them to go out and steal a car. They ask them to go out and cripple someone. They ask them to go out and shoot someone in the back of the legs. Do you let them do that too?
That's the problem.
Exactly.
That's the problem. But what? Let's just say that young cub had been able to stop the Le Mans bombing. Because bomb runs have been stopped here for years. Checkpoints in the right place. Things that got stopped. Things Le Mans could have happened far more often than it did, but it would stop. The majority of IRA operations were stopped, and they were stopped because of intelligence. So what if allowing him to do that then led to the preventing of, say, Le Mans House?
Where
does it sit there morally? That's the problem.
So then let's look at this scenario.
Mm.
Do you let that informant kill one person because he might stop a Le Mans bombing, which would save many lives?
Well, I don't think I would. I don't think I would. But then having said that, I remember talking to a guy years ago, and he was in that side of the station. And he says, look, everybody thinks informants tell you everything they do. They don't. He says they only tell you a quarter of what they're doing. So you don't know what they're doing. That's the problem. But it's already for Danny Morrison coming on and people coming on. You know, let's have the IRA open there. But somebody made a very good point. The army and the police keep records. The IRA don't. We had Martin McGuinness, the Bloody Sunday, saying that his loyalty to the IRA was greater than his loyalty than his obligation to tell the truth.
So you wonder, Alex, where this all ends. You've ombudsman investigations, inquests.
Yep, I agree.
It's a drip, 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 isn't it, of partial information. And what that does is it causes fresh hurt to families. It maybe actually gives them fresh false hope of justice, of getting the truth. All this drip of information.
I think we have to draw a line under it. I think, yes, families are entitled to justice, and I accept that. But nevertheless, it's the practicalities. We need to... As a society, we need to wake up. I was on your show the other night, and we were talking about welfare cuts. That was another. We need to wake up to what's possible, to what's doable, and stick to that instead of charging off on a tangent about, you know, Bloody Sunday was what, 250 million. And are the families any happier now than they were beforehand? Is it any more settled? I don't think so. Everybody knew what happened to Bloody Sunday.
Okay. Listen, Alex, thank you very much indeed, and thanks to my other guests as well.